solved the box. We came. Now you must come with us.
Come to Daddy. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hey everybody, welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 137. I'm Scott Johnson, and joining me tonight is Brian Fleshhooks Dunaway.
I am enjoying you, Scott. Cigarette in, cigarette out, cigarette in, cigarette out, cigarette in. Ah, it burns!
Nice.
Ooh, a Rubik's Cube.
I wasn't expecting that.
That was pretty good. Randy, that mattress is really hard. What? Oh, that Randy, that mattress is really, really hard to get up these stairs, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. Brian, thank you for meeting me here to take a look at this charming, one-of-a-kind home. It's an example of why I became a realtor. It's spacious, charming, cozy, in a secluded setting with exclusive upgrades. Three stories, tons of room that you'll still be finding rooms for days after you move in, and hardwood floors that soak up anything you spill on them. It's a starter home of your dreams, especially if what you dream of every night is grotesque and horrifying. Did I say grotesque and horrifying? I meant unaffected charm. Unaffected charm.
Sold. I'll buy your house.
It was, oh man, that house is horrible.
Let's not go through the kitchen.
No. Don't go through that. And then finally, Brian, that Cenobite must be cold. Just listen to his teeth chatter a bit.
Feed me, Julia. Feed me blood. Must be fresh. Tell me, Julia, sure there's someone in your life that deserves to die, like maybe that sadistic dentist or that pesky daughter? Don't look at me, I'm hideous.
I didn't know you were going to do this voice. That is awesome.
Say come to daddy.
Hey, Julia, don't mind me. Bring me some blood.
That is great, dude. Wear that with like a badge of honor. It's Hellraiser, everybody. And if you don't believe me, believe him.
Hellraiser.
Ooh.
Clive Barker's directing debut follows the tale of a couple played by Andrew Robinson and Claire Higgins who move into an old house and discovers a hideous creature played by Oliver Smith, the man's half-brother and his wife's former lover hiding upstairs. Having lost his earthly body to three demons, the man's been brought back to life by a drop of blood on the floor. Soon, he's forcing his former mistress to bring him human sacrifices to complete his body.
This movie doesn't seem like demons. A movie. Right. Those four.
Yeah,
right.
Four demons. Because it was the big fat blubbery dude.
the fat guy.
You watch the description of the demons and the credits?
Yeah.
Yes.
They're all described so badly. Like, Pinhead isn't even called Pinhead.
Oh, he's like demon leader.
Demon leader, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Go into the trenches, demon leader.
Because in, like, everywhere else, they're called different things. Like, I mean,
apparently, Pinhead is like an affectation that character got by the audience after the film was released.
Hmm.
And we named them all kind of weird stuff, like Fatty and Pinhead.
Yeah, one was like Fatty. Oh, yeah, here's what it is. IMDb has them listed the way that they're called now. So we have Pinhead, the lead Cenobite. We have the Chattering Cenobite. We have Butterball Cenobite.
Every time I hear the word Cinnabite, though, all I can think of some kind of cereal, new cereal.
I think of Cinnabon. That's got to be the little miniature Cinnabon. Yeah.
The little bites.
This little one.
What's interesting is the one that's considered the fat guy is real thin. The actor who played him is just this thin little slight man.
He's a fat suit.
The girl should be called Neck That Looks Like a Vagina. Should have been her name. That's what I always thought when I was a kid, anyway. So I had to get that out early. So I said it last week, and I'll just remind everybody. This is a movie I saw, and I know you've never seen it. This is your first time too, right, Randy, I think?
Yes, my first time.
Brian Dunaway and I have both seen it. When I was young and saw it, I was kind of harmed by seeing it. It really bothered me. And I had nightmares forever about it, and I couldn't get it out of my head. And any reference to Pinhead or any of the stuff that happened in it just freaked me out, really got to me.
Okay, but I, now I'm seeing it for the first time. I have to ask, are you combining these memories of seeing this movie and maybe Hellraiser 2? Because Pinhead is barely in this movie.
No, he comes in the last 15 or 20 minutes, which I don't remember being the case, but I've never seen any of the other ones. And there are there are a ton of them. There's another
You've never seen nine
of these, some direct DVD stuff. And I haven't seen any of those. And this is the only one I ever saw. The reason I didn't see the rest is because this thing freaked me out. I couldn't take it anymore.
Right. It's very effectual. When you first see, I mean, you guys probably seen Pinhead before you watched the movie. I mean, you've probably seen images of it or whatever.
Oh, God.
So it's definitely not as impactful. Man, the first time you see Pinhead, I mean, have you never seen it in any other form? I mean, it's freaky.
He'll tear your soul apart, is my understanding.
Yes, he will.
So I'm happy to report something. I think it's just as freaky as when I saw it when I was a kid. Maybe that's a tribute to the film, but I'm no less like I like a movie that freaked me out when I was a kid to see it now and go, that was dumb. I can't believe that freaked me out. I must have been too young to, you know, to see through all this cheese or whatever. And while this has some cheese, mostly in the form of, again, bad lightning effects, it's still, I found this thing gross and shocking and terrifying in some ways. A lot of that crap holds up, and I didn't expect that. I thought I was going to find out that it was all just cheese and it was no problem, but I'm still a little bit freaked out by this movie.
Same thing for me. I was surprised. I really was expecting this to not be anything. If you ever went back and watched A Nightmare on Elm Street, I mean, the effects are just horrific. It's not really scary at all, but this really, it holds up.
Yep. So let's ask the newcomers.
Yeah.
What did let's start with Brian. Brian Ibbett over there, just to my left, unless you're looking at the map, and then you're on my right, or it's the other way around. If your first time, did this do anything for you? Did you, you know?
It was entertaining, but I think a lot of the holding up that you guys are talking about are a lot of the, obviously the holding up, but the power that this movie still has is just holdover from that initial screening,
Nostalgia.
It had its moments. The special effects are still good enough that it's not like, oh God, come on. It's like, oh, all right, that's not bad. Like, you know, the hooks going through the flesh and the guy rising up out of the floor still holds up or still looks pretty good even for whatever it is 25 years later. But story wise, it's a little soap opery, a little
For sure. Yeah. Like the whole Frank coming back and getting the lady to do stuff for him again, but the hammers to the head and the sounds he would make when he was sucking them out, and that the vision of that thing coming traipsing across the floor before he could stand, still just the willies. So Randy, how did it do for you at a first view?
It was a crappy movie. my big point of this film, the thing I keep saying again and again to myself is, why is everything so dirty? Why it's so dirty?
The first scene in the film,
the magic box is sold from James Hong to someone else, and they exchange. Both of them have dirty fingernails. Both of them in this exchange. And then you go on to the house. The whole house is dirty. People move into a house and they don't even clean one bathroom. They don't go into one bathroom and scrub that sucker from top to bottom. It stays dirty the whole film. Everything's dirty. You end up in a hospital that's dirty.
The hospital's filthy.
That alone made me feel like the film wasn't trying to tell me a story. It was just trying to freak me out.
I completely understand. And there's definitely some of that. I just wonder if there's maybe you kind of said it, but I think there is a, it's like any movie. If it's a movie I loved as a kid and I see it again now and it holds up, then I'm really thrilled about it. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it kind of depresses me that it's as scary as I remember it. But I think if I'd have seen it through eyes that were fresh, I think I would have probably have seen more of the flaws and been less like, oh yeah, that guy all bloody up there is kind of gross still. And
yeah,
ooh, the way,
and
you
that's
know.
You know what, and I talked about a couple of the good special effects. I mean, that thing that lives behind the wall, the demon that runs after you as you're
with the going scorpion through tail and the
that
thing. I don't remember that, actually. You want the truth be told, I don't remember that at all. In that movie.
That chase was scary. I don't either, because it was so brief. But yeah, that was freaking scary.
But see, but having never seen it, it probably looks like the biggest, dumbest rubber suit of all time. And I don't know why I can't. There are a few things in my life that I saw as a kid that I cannot get past. Hellraiser is one of them. I don't know why. Something about Clive Barker, dude. Something about his sensibilities, his tone. And you were talking a little bit off air, so I'm kind of want to talk about this.
Yeah.
About the difference between, say, Stephen King, who's one of short stories we saw in movie form last week, and now this from Clive Barker, and those two being kind of these contemporaries of each other, but also, you know, you were either a fan of one or the other, or it seemed like people couldn't be both or whatever. So tell me more about what you were thinking.
Well, I think the big dividing line between Stephen King and Clive Barker comes down to one word: suspense. There's Stephen King's got leans more towards the suspense, the buildup, the stuff you don't see, while Clive Barker does more with the stuff you do see. And you see it right away. Very, very bold graphic images and stuff that jumps out and things like that. Admittedly, I've read Stephen King books. I've not read a Clive Barker book. So I'm basing it completely on what I've seen in the films. But
That's an interesting distinction, because one is hooks in your flesh, and showing that as intimately and close up and as gross and grotesquely with the horrible screams, that is very different from it took our whole movie to find out that the clown under the street is really, you know, whatever.
right.
And sometimes that frustrates me, reading King books and going, damn it, when are we going to get to the meat of this thing? Why is this taking so long to find out that that guy could do this or whatever? So as much as I appreciate that, sometimes I want things a little bit quicker. Well, Clive Barker goes maybe too far the other way and says, well, here you go, torture porn right up front. Let's get some hooks in this guy's meat.
And I think, you know, both of them have their place. I'm not saying one's better than the other or anything like that. I think that that there's just two, you know, one is more suspense horror, the other one is more graphic horror, or, you know, that's probably the best way I can describe it is they're both in the horror genre, but they're very different ways of telling the same story.
Yeah. One has, I'll say this, one, the King stuff sometimes has more of a droplet or two of hope in it. And his, Barker's movies or stories don't. They're not hopeful at all. I can't speak for all of it, because I like Weave World, I've always wanted to read and I never got around to. And I hear that's kind of cool and different. It's about a whole fantasy world that's in a rug. Or something. Which is really interesting to me. And maybe
the
one day. Maybe one day I'll read it. In fact, I used to get Weave World and The Stand mixed up when I was younger. I thought they were the same thing for a long time. But anyway, if I want to feel like there's some, at least some heroism and some hope in the world, I'll read Stephen King and go, okay, well, those three guys are cool. And maybe not all of them, not everyone will live, but one of those guys is going to be triumphant and be cool for the rest of whatever. The Clive Barker dudes, it's going to be terrible from minute one. No one will survive. And if they do, it's not a good life, you know, and it's awful and there's no hope and everything hurts. I don't know. This is hard to explain, but those are, maybe I'm saying the same thing you are, but I see it in that kind of visceral way. Yeah. So anyway, it's a movie. It's a thing. And it's something we're going to talk about. It took 6 hours to apply the prosthetic Cenobite makeup to Doug Bradley, who played Pinhead. But Randy makes a good point. This dude, seriously, is supposed to be like this movie and this movie series is, and I can't speak to the other sequels, so I'm sure they show him more, but it's supposed to be the Freddy or the Jason of the series, sort of, I guess. And it's like the last 15 minutes.
Right.
And it's memorable, but man, it's not long enough.
This reminds me of a lot of movies that, like Friday the 13th. If you watch the first one, you know, Jason is not really even in it. He's not in it except for, you know, he's a little boy and he's drowning and that kind of thing. And the same thing with Hellraiser. I mean, it's mostly about the family. I mean, it has very little to do with the Cenobites other than in the last couple of minutes, really.
Yeah.
I mean, in the last little bit of the movie.
It's mostly about Frank, right?
Right, right. It's about that whole soap opera relationship that you were talking about.
Yeah.
And it's about that. It's about the daughter trying to
come to daddy. Come to daddy.
Come to daddy. I love that.
Yeah.
And I just don't get the feeling that they realized that Pinhead would be the standout,
the star. Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, you mean? Yeah. That's a good point.
Just because he's so cool visually, I think
that's the good point. Because in the book of the short story, probably didn't matter that much. But the minute you get that guy on screen and he's in that black leather robe and he's got the pins everywhere and half his guts are hanging out and everybody's in permanent S&M torture mode.
Yes.
No one has safe words in the Cenobite world. You know what I mean?
Right.
So when he gets up there, it's such a striking image. And then to top it off, and I'm going to play this a little early, but to top that off, you get this. Where is it?
We'll tear your soul apart.
That's ominous as hell. You don't forget that. You know?
And that's been sampled a lot of times in the trivia as well. That has been sampled lots of times in other songs and stuff because it's such a memorable.
That's in other songs? What songs is that in? That would be weird.
They're edited. I mean, if you look at Wikipedia, it talks about his character. In that phrase being used a lot,
like in people's music,
yeah.
Oh wow,
mostly dark music.
Okay, well yeah.
I mean, it's not like country music or anything, you know.
How do we feel about Clive Barker as director? You guys think he did an all right job?
Mm-hmm. I think he did good.
Yeah,
it's all right. Yeah. I mean, the directing wasn't the issue with this movie.
What's your biggest issue?
I don't know. I guess the depth of the non-horror side of the story. I mean, the guys, the dad, Frank or Larry or whatever. I guess Frank is the dead brother. Frank is the dead brother. It's the Larry is the husband, the new husband.
It is Larry, right?
Yes, and okay, he's just such a doofus. I mean, it makes you wonder how these two would ever end up in the same.
Right, right. Location. And those sweaters he wears, man. No wonder she wouldn't make love to him.
Right.
But you know, that's what I thought the same thing when I was watching. I was like, oh, man, his character is just such a wiener and just no good.
You don't care.
But,
it's like, oh, whatever. You know.
But when he got possessed, he actually did a really good
He didn't get possessed.
Job.
That was just Frank with his face wrapped.
When he was, when he was using his skin suit.
The daughter's too dumb to notice. Like, Dad, what's wrong with your hairline? Don't worry about that.
Yeah, the daughter is about the only person in here you kind of root for because the wife is a skank, slut. Frank is, you know, skinless and wandering up in the attic.
The mom had what I used to call brick hair back in the 80s. It's this weird, solid piece of hair that's just – I hate that look. There's something about her that just – it makes you about 20 years older than you should be. Right, but she got naked, so whatever.
Yeah, she definitely got naked.
Ugh. Gross. What else? I mean, I like naked people. Don't get me wrong, but she's gross. She plays an old gypsy lady in that movie with James Bond in it with the
007,
the big giant bears,
what?
The big talking bears.
Country Bear Jamboree.
No, it's a fantasy book. It's that dude is a total atheist who wrote it. Help me here, Randy. You know this.
I think we lost Randy.
Oh.
Well, then he won't
know this from where he's calling.
The Golden Compass.
The Golden Compass, right.
Oh, okay.
Golden Compass. She plays an old gypsy woman in that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think I did see that, yeah.
Yeah. Her face would be immediately recognizable as that once you've seen both. All right, we're back. Technical difficulties aside, Brian Ibbett over there found something about a series in development. Do you want to?
Yes. So a couple of quick things as I was looking, getting information about this. So the first off, compared to all the other top grossing horror franchises, Nightmare on Elm Street, Child's Play, Friday the 13th, Halloween, Saw, Scream, and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and adjusting for 2008 inflation, Hellraiser is the lowest grossing horror franchise in the United States.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's not a U.S. movie, is it? The first one was British, right?
It is, right. It is considered to be a British British horror series.
It's very British.
It's below Child's Play, which is $200 million, and Hellraiser is at $84 million when you take into account all nine.
All nine, films. Only 84 total?
Only 84 total.
You guys,
I don't know, those are terrible
numbers. That's not good.
Horrible numbers. However, that said, as of April 2012, just earlier this year, There's been talk that Sonar Entertainment is developing Hellraiser for the small screen, along with some of the early principal players of the franchise.
Wow.
It would be a TV series based on the cult British horror series. Looking for any other information. Worried even if it would contain, if Pinhead would make an appearance or if there's a network or anything like that.
Oh, you got to have Pinhead.
That was as of April, and there's a great graphic of a remote control with a bunch of pins jabbed in it.
Nice.
I
know a bunch of like the comic books spinoffs from this have all done a bunch of extra stuff with other Xenobites or Cenobites that aren't the big three. They make appearances, okay. But they have a lot of fun with bringing in guest
Cenobites.
Yeah, with weird problems, like guys with stakes through their eyes or dude where half his head is like a giant bulbous sort of balloon filled with pus or something. And
it's like a muscle little rubber wrestling men kind of thing where you can come up with different cool muscle variations men. On the demon theme. Yes.
Remember those things? Muscle men?
Yeah, fantastic. I do remember those things. That's awesome.
Now, Brian, you said you saw, did you see Hellraiser 2? I know Scott didn't.
Mm-hmm. Right. I have seen Hellraiser 2. I went through these and I went through the Phantasm movies back in the day. That was
and
like
is Hellraiser 2 ones. from the looks of it, from the description, is it origin stories for the big four? Demons,
yeah, they go much more into the origin. I wouldn't say it's really origin stories. It's not like the whole movie is not about the origin, but they do definitely dig into those characters a lot more.
I think at the end, isn't Pinhead reduced back to his mortal self and has to figure out how to get back to being Pinhead again? I'm pretty sure that's the deal.
It's been years since I've seen two. I don't remember if that's the storyline or not. That's a good question.
I'm going to find that.
Big problem with the film is everything left unexplained. Mm. Everything. Mm-hmm. There's nothing explained in this film. There's a little tiny bit of explanation about how Uncle Frank is getting his body back. But that's how he knows what to do to get his body back is not explained. Nothing is explained. Mm-hmm. What the box is about, how it works, what it does, not explained. How, you know, what in the world kind of control Frank has over what's her name, the lead? Linda?
Julia.
Not explained. It's referred to in all this PG-13 sex stuff, but it's not explained. There's just so much not explained in this movie that I'm trying to think. It's trying to trick me here. It's trying to convince me to spend more time and money, like watching other movies or reading a book or something, and I'm not going to fall for it.
Yeah. Well, this is what here's a little bit of deeper stuff on it. Pinhead is the leader of the Cenobites, formerly human creatures from an extra-dimensional realm who travel to Earth through the Lament configuration and harvest human souls. Depicted as intelligent and articulate, the character was deliberately presented as a departure from the mute or wisecracking 80s horror movie villains who preceded him, being based more on Count Dracula and the like. So there's obviously a lot more, and that sounds like a bunch of hoke to me. Jeez.
Right.
It doesn't sound as fun as like these are just from your bad dreams or something. Mm-hmm. And here's how these interplanetary demons who are really into poking themselves with stuff get into your life as they give you a freaking Rubik's Cube box to have you try to solve it. It's an odd basis for any sort of storytelling. I think and you know what? Maybe this is Clive Barker, maybe, but his stuff is more like shock value as to what you're looking at and less about, now wait a minute, tell me the backstory of this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But apparently in two and in three, it's at one point, he just becomes like a homeless dude with no power. Basically like the
Pinhead does?
Like Prophecy 2 a little bit.
Right.
Where he gets reduced down to just a dude. And he's got to try to get – it's like Superman. It's Superman 2. He's got to get his powers back. He's got to trick everybody to stand outside the little thing while he gets all the power and they don't. So, part of me kind of wants to see all that followed through. Like, I kind of want to go and find all that and see – I want to see him as a deposed – like Q when Q got kicked out of the continuum.
Sure.
You know?
Lost his power.
It's kind of fun.
When he was laying naked on the bridge and the guy from L.A. Law was running the show after that. What's his name? Corbin Burnson was in charge.
Yeah.
So I would like to – I don't know. I would just like to more. Oh, here it is. They tell his backstory. Check this out. Origins. Character's past. It's alluded to in Hellbound, Hellraiser 2. Only alluded to, I guess, but it is expanded upon in Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth, where it's revealed that Pinhead originated as Elliot Spencer, a captain in the British Expeditionary Force suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder and survivor's guilt after having participated in one of the Battle of Flanders, you know, where the big giant mustache got fired.
Yes, in diddly doodly.
Spencer lost faith in humanity after witnessing its cruelty to itself and lost faith in God, whom he believed had failed humanity. This disillusioned and jaded Spencer wandered Earth, indulging in hedonistic lifestyles, turning to the baser methods of gratification for satisfaction and pleasure, until finding the lament configuration in British India in 1922, which I guess is that box.
That's the box. That's right. That's what they call it.
So there are pictures of him here in his like World War One outfit, looking just really dumb. And you guys, let's watch Hell on Earth is all I'm saying. Part of this shows a picture of Pinhead flanked by the Siamese twin Cenobite, which is a two-headed Cenobite with these two heads with like the most gross connective tissue between the heads. Maybe I'm into this. Maybe I'll need to watch these. They're all on Netflix.
I'm looking at number two, actually, the description for number two, which looks like the beginning does follow Captain Elliot Spencer. And then you get the continuation of this story with the daughter, Christy, and what happens after.
Is she in it?
She is in it. Yeah, she's apparently the central character in the second.
I find Ashley Lawrence an attractive young lady.
She's beautiful. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, she's a cute girl.
Yeah, she's a couple years older than us, but at the time, I remember thinking, "Oh yeah, she's all right." She's playing like she's playing like 18 or something, 20 right, maybe. Right. I don't know. Anyway,
I didn't find the character satisfying. I found nothing in this film satisfying, actually, now that I think about it. It wasn't scary enough. There weren't any good explanations. The characterizations were all a little off. Like, I love me some Andrew Robinson. But he didn't have a good character to chew up.
T. Frank? He was, or is he the...
Larry.
Garrick.
Why do we keep calling him Larry?
Well, Andrew Robinson was Larry.
Was he? There was no Larry, I don't think.
In Internet Movie Database is...
was there a Larry?
Yeah. Andrew Robinson is Larry.
All right. Larry. Okay.
Love me some Andrew Robinson. what a strange man.
Yeah, no kidding.
In this movie. Mm. Like, and not strange, like quirky and eccentric. Just not quite all there, you know?
He's all, I'm confident. I got this wife and kid. And oh no, I've cut my hand with a thing. I'm going to throw up and faint.
Yeah.
Right.
It's me. Right.
Yeah, that's.
Head bleeding. Fix me.
Fix me, honey. Oh, come up here in this dark, disgusting room and let's look at it. There's no infection possibility up here in this horrid place. I will say my stomach turned just a little bit at that food in the kitchen. Boy.
Oh, yeah.
I can't deal with that. Like worms and bugs and a big old freaking hissing roach crawling out of your steak. Dude, that is so nasty. All right. So here's some fun trivia. The budget for the movie was $1 million and earned about $20
million. $1
million. So that's pretty good. Clive Barker did all right. He only did two short films before this, so he did okay. He did some other stuff later, like Master of Illusion, and I can't remember the other ones. Something in 05, I think he did. Anyway, the concept of a cube being used as a portal to hell has basis in the urban legends of The Devil's Toy Box, which concerns a six-sided cube constructed of inward-facing mirrors. According to the stories, individuals who enter the structure and then close it will undergo surreal, disturbing phenomenon that will simultaneously grant them a revelatory experience and then permanently warp their mind so they can never tell anyone else about it.
Mm. Okay.
Clive Barker's sitting around eating a sandwich going, that's a pretty good idea.
Hey, well, what an interesting thing that... why wasn't this said in the movie?
Yes, right. I'm totally with you.
By the end of the movie, the cube can do anything. If it just somebody just randomly twists some stuff and it can kill off demons or whatever, to re-imprison them or whatever. Like, why not give me some explanation so I'm biting off on this?
You're only going to get them if you go watch a bunch of real bad sequels. Mm-hmm. That's the only way you're going to get that explanation. But yeah, that would be at least interesting. If they ever rebooted this as an actual film today... I would hope they'd do more of that. Spend less time with you know, Frank the PBS body man.
Right, it's a good body.
Good body. Frank good body. Slim good body. Yeah, slim good body. Running around the house going, my nerves are starting to heal. Therefore, I need another perverted freaking hotel visiting businessman.
Right.
No, yeah. I did show
in the box, those guys. Right.
They were chicks in the box. for sure.
I really did feel unsatisfied because, like, the last two or three guys, I mean, he wasn't developing anything from what I could tell. It's like he ran like a really big jump from the first.
No, one of them gave him his nerves, and one of them gave him the ability to taste a cigarette, right? Like,
so right, right.
I was joking when we were watching the film. Tina watched it with me. I'm like, give me another one. Bring me a fat guy.
right.
Big fat guy.
Bring me a guy who just ate some pork.
Yeah, I only need one, maybe two. I'm like, one fat guy.
Go get a guy who's walking out of a McDonald's.
Go get Porkins.
Porkins.
He's available. I just watched him on, what's it called? The Ark, Raiders of the Lost Ark last night.
Oh, yeah.
God, he was in that. All right, moving on to, I wanted to say, this isn't our first Clive Barker. Not our first time to the Clive Barker bar. We did it at Candyman, if you recall.
Oh, Candyman was right. Clive Barker, yep.
Now, what a weird, different kind of movie, though, that was. Like, that's not, Candyman, I don't feel like is Barkery enough.
No, it's like less demons and hell as opposed to pimp with a meat hook,
pimp with a meat hook.
And a mouthful of bees,
like,
right.
Right, exactly. Like, he's not necessarily just this conjured up demon. I guess all the Cenobites did have some earthly origin, but it didn't feel like as much with this as it did with Candyman, as like this guy who was killed and comes back and is a bastard.
Brian, here's a little fun for Nerdtacular next time you do the Frog Pants All-Stars. Sure. I think it'd be fun to have trivia where we had to pick character names out of your bad descriptions, like pimp with a meat hook and a mouthful of bees. And we'd have to guess what that is.
Sure.
I would love that, but we can only say Candyman once. Yeah. Here's a trope for you. I got one. I'm sick of jumpy dreams. I'm sick of dreams that seem real at first and then people wake up from them. I'm tired of movies doing that. I don't need those anymore.
Yeah.
I know that seems it's tropey to almost mention it, but
right. It only happened like during one part of the film where everybody's having these nightmares.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember how that all played out. I kind of tried to, I hate it. As soon as it came on, I went, okay, dream sequence. She's going to jump out of bed and be all freaked out. And by the way, worst boyfriend ever. That guy sucked.
Sleeping in a separate bed, apparently.
Come on. Steve's not so bad. Come some slack.
How come if it was a British movie, they didn't just give everyone British accents? Why did it have to be?
Give everyone.
No. It was. Are we talking about Star Wars Episode 4 now? Because that happens. That's
it does. But in this case, they've got some British actors who are phasing in and out of their accent, and the main dude Larry, he was for a while there, kind of sounded a little British, but then he sounded real American. The daughter was real American.
Really, I don't remember Larry sounding British at all.
He did.
Julie
a
was
couple
straight
of times.
On.
She
straight
was.
On Brit.
She was. She probably couldn't do it. She was like Ewan McGregor. She just can't do it. but somebody else. Oh, and then you know the Cenobites all Brit, but the bad guys are always British, so that doesn't really count. I guess what I'm saying is I think I would have appreciated it if they would have made this just really British.
Right.
Like I love British films. Just British as hell. Just dripping with it. Like hard to understand. Terrible accent. Like. Just thick, dirty, smoggy movies.
With all the space vampires.
With Captain Picard.
Life Force. Yeah, Super British Life Force was on the Super Nintendo, and then Life Force 64 was a real hit.
Life Force World,
Life Force World. you had a dinosaur that would eat stuff and then become those things.
So they previously were in New York. We got that. They said that more than once. They'd previously been in New York, and this was going to be better than New York.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's a trope.
Okay, give it a trope here. Hold on.
It is a trope. It's this where in the world are these people where everything's dirty. You might know the girl and her brand new boyfriend walk home through a subway that's the dirtiest freaking subway I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like where is this place?
It was Hellraiser land. The house was horrible. Everything was haunted. It was bad.
Dirty, I can name so many movies like this.
Yeah.
You know,
do they
like
all
Payback?
Have...
Remember Payback?
Oh, I love Payback.
You spend the whole movie kind of wondering where he is exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Nondescript. You're like, well, that's got to be Eastern Seaboard, something, but it's its own place. It's like westerns. You're not going to
where did American Beauty take place?
On a belly button full of flower bells. I still haven't seen that movie.
Just have one visual. Oh, really? I haven't seen
That's
that.
Why, because I don't have any other reference point. I just have
You've never seen American Beauty.
I haven't, no. It's on my list of shame. I know I need to see it. I just What? You didn't like it?
That's okay.
Oh, that's great.
It's a little overrated.
Is this?
I'll give Brian that it's a little overrated.
It's got right. Chris Cooper in it. I like him.
Yeah. Kevin Spacey is great. And that
any movie that goes on for like 5 minutes about a plastic bag being beautiful, I'm like,
what? I don't even know what this has got to be great. I got to watch it. And one of my favorite montages in horror history. So here's this. I love the montage of businessmen she brought back.
Right, right. Bringing great. Perfect. Sexing up the fake sexing up the businessmen.
I kind of thought it was cool. Like it was well
and the
suited.
First guy. Right, and the first guy like Phil Collins, like a cheap man. Phil
that
Collins.
Guy was the worst. Loved him. Grossed me out. Kissing on her neck and being all smarmy. Boy, they got that down all right. The creep factor was pretty good on that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that part.
I was.
Well, let's
I was,
do it on the floor. Have you never done it on the floor before?
I was
the filthiest floor.
I was bothered. He's in there in his whitey tighty, standing there going, I'm like, do you not notice that you just entered that part of Silent Hill that nobody likes? Ugh. Right. Sorry, Randy. I didn't know what to do there.
I don't know.
Sorry.
You brought up tighty whities and just you drained my brain of all thought.
It's just so hard to watch. It's nothing sexy about any of that business. Here's another one. I just wanted to say the nurses with the hats are back. So,
oh, yeah.
That was great. Also, was that supposed to be a dream sequence? It wasn't, was it?
No. That was a horrible hospital. Man.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. They were acting. It felt like a, what's you call him, movie. It was like watching Brazil or something. Like,
right.
Everything's just a little bit off.
It was. And that's part of what they're trying to do is make
Clyde
it feel
Barker
a little bit
thing,
off.
I
didn't understand why she had to talk to the police. I didn't understand that.
I don't remember her talking to the police. When did that happen?
Well, she didn't, but the doctor came in and said, here's your cube. You were holding on to it like it was really important. Oh, by the way, the police would like to talk to you. I'm like, well, why? Mm. What is she passed out. I mean, other than that, what does she do?
Yeah. She's about to play with her Rubik's Cube until the wall turns black.
Right.
That's what she's about to do.
I got to go back to a trope I've already brought up three times.
Oh, good.
This is... The trope of the film for me is the object of evil.
Yeah.
The object of evil is the One Ring. It's the videotape from the ring. It's the Coke bottle in the Gods Must Be Crazy is what it is. It really, really is. Like that. Just we're not going to explain to you exactly how in the world this thing is only causing evil to happen. It's just evil, and that's all there is to it. And you need to get rid of it at the end of the film. And damn it, if the freaking dragon guy doesn't come and pluck it out of the fire.
Oh, that. Oh, can we talk about the dragon guy. Homeless guy for a second?
Yes. I love him.
I love that he's spending that. Most of his time on the street and eating handfuls of crickets from the pet store.
Right, right. And I was assuming that it's supposed to be, he's supposed to be like a biblical character, like, you know, the honey and locusts. No.
Very, you know what he reminded me of? He reminded me of something McFarlane would have put in the Spawn comic. Like,
he was. Right. He reminded me of Moses in the Ten Commandments. Actually, yeah. He looked like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, Moses had this thing for a handful of crickets as well. It's a little known fact. But the cube is almost.
It's almost a MacGuffin.
Yeah.
I mean, other than the fact that all right, you do use it to conjure up these guys, but that is all you know about it. It's almost like the, you know, great examples there, Randy, but like the briefcase in Pulp Fiction. You don't know how it works. You just know that it's the object that
it's the board game in Jumanji. It's the Ark in Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's any of these. It's the chalice in the third one. It's every movie. It seems like every movie that is supernatural of any kind has something like this. Like, I'm trying to think.
Right.
But this is a really good...
The Ark and Raiders of the Lost Ark is a great comparison.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it was capable... Well, the nice thing about that thing, it was at least capable, I guess, supposedly of something good, except instead the Nazis got melted and... Close your eyes, Marion! Keep them shut! Don't look at it, Marion! Oh, it holds up. But yeah, just about every movie... I'm trying to think of other examples. Maybe it's not every movie, but a lot of these movies do rely on this thing. And the movies usually end with that thing being passed on to another hand.
Right, right.
Like this one did. So if it's, what's it like? I can't, I can't think of a good one, but they'll end the movie with the thing showing up, washes up on shore, and some little kid finds it.
Right.
Or something, and oh, sequel. Anyway, I like
exactly
that.
Exactly what it is.
Okay, what else? Oh, it took us a long time to show us the guys. We talked about that. I can't stand the 80s electricity effects. Those were real bad in this movie.
Yeah, second week in a row we've seen the 80s electricity effect.
Mm-hmm. I'll still say the maggot barfing guy really grosses me out that they show when...
The closet.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, and yeah.
Leans forward in a mouthful of maggots. Oh, dude. Dude.
Yeah, and what's that supposed to... That's a whole different room than the other one that the Cenobites are in. So what, they can like go through closets?
Mm-hmm.
No, that's... That was the first body that she dumped.
Was that the dude? That was one of the businessmen, right?
Right, yeah. That was the first body she dumped.
Well, then... Didn't he... I thought he consumed those guys. Or he just take their blood?
He took their blood.
Okay. Right.
He just took their blood.
Like the floor
did. And he got kind of sloppy later on because he didn't take as much blood. First guy, he drained totally. Right. And then, like, the second one, he was kind of like, yeah, whatever. Bring me more.
Yeah.
Well, that guy had to pee, so there was a lot of urine in there, and he wasn't really...
Right, right.
Once again, fire kills everything. Kills the thing at the end?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what did it kill? I'm trying to remember now. Fire killed something.
They burned the cube.
The house down.
Yeah, right. And then they go burn the cube.
And it's like, okay, the house is on fire, and then cut away, come back, and it's just some piles of wood with flames. Like three, four piles of wood with flames, and let's throw the cube into one.
Throw the cube into one of those, let homeless Joe over there walk into the flames. Apparently, the human body's pretty good at concealing a giant pterodactyl body.
Oh, my God.
I really did love that. That was maybe my favorite part because it doesn't have any bear. He's the chick in the bucket. Because what's the point? So. Who's he? What is he doing?
Yeah, they never say. Yeah, he just kind of, other than the retriever of the cube.
Oh, that was really dumb.
Just a big pervert, lots of sex photos, and.
Yeah, still scared me, though. I'm not going to lie. All right, well, there you go. Let's play some clips.
Ooh, this movie, at the whole time I'm watching it, I'm thinking, this is going to make some good clips.
This has good clips, good clips.
Yes.
So we'll just start. Here's a good one.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
Oh, yeah. I have a cube here that apparently that guy never opens, but whatever.
Was that James Hong?
Oh, I don't know. Let's play it again.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
Ah! Oh, it was.
I don't know, but I just called him James Hong because it just seemed to me.
Yeah,
it
was like very James Hong-esque.
There was no credit. I watched the credits twice. There was no credit for this guy.
Don't get gremlin wet.
Yeah.
Or you get a free frogget or whatever.
Box. There was no haunted box salesman in the credits.
But he is that guy. He is that trope. Which is I love that guy in movies. I really do. The guy that's got the old trinket and the one eye that's all glossed over that doesn't work right. I love that guy.
Oh, it was yours all along. Well, then why'd you make me give you so much damn money for it?
Oh, jeez.
Right.
All right. Like, I love that they're just in it for the business, but they also have all this secret information about the mystery, mysterious past of the object.
Yes.
It's great. Don't get it wet. What's your pleasure? I already did that one. How about this one? Oh, this is you want to hear what bugs sound like when they're crawling around on meat?
Oh, yes, please.
Here you go. Ugh, dude.
Oh, like somebody crumpling some paper.
Right. They had a lot of weird effects. Like one of the times I'm pretty sure they slowed down. Now when you get to the bottom of a drink and you're slurping it through the straw so you can get the waitress's attention,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure they slowed that down and that was what he was making that noise.
Wait, you do that to get the waitress's attention?
Yeah, it's like
like you want a refill.
Yeah, I need a refill over here.
You know, shake the empty glass, like rattle the ice. Right.
I don't think I've ever done that. I don't think
I don't do it either. But I've seen people do it. It's totally rude.
People must do it. All right, here's some weird.
I've seen people snap their fingers, and that seems like so rude.
Now, if I played the next clip and you guys didn't have context for it, you might think this is something a little hot. But I'll play it now, and you guys can guess what it is.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Yeah. Now, just take it straight up.
Don't worry, it'll get through.
All right, there you got my arm.
All right.
Watch it.
Let's take five, guys.
Oh, this mattress.
Oh, is that the
nailing
sequence where?
Wasn't that
where she's up there remembering about getting nailed, and he actually does get nailed with his hands?
Nice, funny. Nice parallel.
I didn't think that. Yeah.
That
I know is I was very nervous about it. I'm like, oh, just come on, just do it. Just nail it already.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Clive Barker's one of those guys that give him a slightly different path about the age of 15.
Mass murder.
Yeah, something weird like that. I always think that. Like, sometimes the things that come out of people's heads, if it was just twisted one direction or the other, they could be totally goofed up.
Right. But is that, do you really, like, we talked about Stephen King a lot last week and the two weeks before. I don't know. It's easy to get the impression of somebody that the art they create reflects their true self.
Oh, I don't think it reflects their true self. I just think if they're coming up with that stuff and putting it out there, it's their outlet for it. I'm just saying one twist or turn or one bad parenting moment later or something could take that same energy they've got for this kind of material and put it in some other way. Obviously, there's no way to say. Who knows? Jeffrey Dahmer bonk him in the head twice and he could have been the best author we ever knew. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that Chuck Palahniuk is one of the craziest dudes in his personal life as well as in his writing life. I
read like Garth Ennis comics and I feel the same way about his stuff.
It comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
I just want to say that I honestly feel like that feeling is because artists are the ones who are creating the art and everybody else isn't.
Keeping you awake?
If everybody... what?
It sounded like a yawn or something.
Yeah, did it?
I think you were hiccuping or having a scotch moment or something.
I just feel like if everyone created art that everyone consumed,
you
this might go away. You might realize, oh, everybody's got this outlandish stuff that they're able to conjure. It just happens that Stephen King is the horror writer.
Do you feel like you could write something that subversive, that dark, that...
Oh, okay, yeah, maybe that's what I'm getting at. I feel like anybody with a grasp of the English language, they couldn't write it a great story, a gripping story, something that you would say, wow, I want to have read that. But they could. I believe that. If pretty much anybody who's, got English could sit down if you paid them and write a crappy horror story.
Got English.
I mean, I do a lot of thinking where I think about worst case scenarios, and the stuff that I can come up with in my head is pretty gnarly. Like stuff that I'm not even comfortable telling people how I envisioned that plane crashing or how I envisioned that certain situation to end badly or something. And that doesn't mean I'm out there trying to cause these things to directly happen. I get your point. I totally get your point. But I'll read things sometimes, like I've used Garth Ennis as an example in his comics, some of the stuff he does. And I'll read it and go, whoa, dude, really? Like, that's where you went there? How did you even think to go there? And it's easy to get caught up in this idea that just one drink too many or one, nudge in the right direction or something, you could send somebody in some weird way. But maybe you could say that about all of us, Like maybe
Like I'd like to say about Scott Johnson the other direction. Let's take this the whole other direction, 180 degrees. Every now and then, Scott Johnson, the comic artist, does something that really touches people's hearts, and it's happened again and again over a decade now. Scott will put out a comic that's just got a heartwarming thought, and people receive it in a way that even Scott doesn't expect. They're going to receive this changed my life, Scott, sort of reaction that they have. And that doesn't make Scott one of the most heartwarming people ever.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like he's just the person who happens to be creating that as an outlet for his creative energy.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I hadn't really considered it from the opposite perspective. This is what I was hoping we'd talk about with Clive Barker, though. Like, this is the kind of stuff I hoped we'd touch on, because to me, he is the one guy growing up where I'd read something, see something, whatever this included, where I'd go, man, twisted. This dude is twisted. And he's probably just fine. He's 60 now. He looks fine. He's not going to die one day on his armchair and we're going to go downstairs in his basement and find a bunch of dead people or something. Like, that's not going to happen. So I don't know. I think if you're, let me put it this way. I'm glad Clive Barker has his artistic outlet for his weird ass shite. So he doesn't go out and take it out on bunnies and animals and stuff. And I'm not saying he would, but it's an interesting, I don't know. I find that kind of thing, the psychology of what people create versus who they are, I think that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What else here? Oh, we got weird grunting. How about her mother's looks?
Is that your daughter?
Uh-huh.
Got her mother's looks?
Her mother's dead.
Oh.
I don't understand why it's so bad. It's like, okay, whatever.
Well, who is that guy you had come help you that doesn't know this?
Right.
Well, they're all
hired movers.
Oh, were they? I thought they were friends.
Oh, yeah, no. No, the way those guys are ogling everybody who walks by now.
Okay.
Those are especially hired mover dudes. Although I never have to help the hired mover guys actually move a mattress.
Hmm. Right. Where you end up putting the nail through your hand. Yeah. Good.
I'm sure they just ran off like, oh, it's going.
Scrape his head. Oh, no.
Oh, no. I've heard this wood sucks blood. All right. Speaking of blood.
Every drop of blood you spill puts more flesh on my bones. And we both want that, don't we?
Okay, the dude who played Pinhead, the Pinhead guy is the guy who played him with the... So they switched actors and put the makeup on him again. Right. So he was in the movie way longer than just Pinhead time.
True.
Which is
interesting. I didn't understand why they did that, but yeah, it was... Maybe he's a better actor in costume or something than the other guy.
There was some DVD commentary where he mentioned a party, an after party, or a post-shoot rap party, I guess they call it there in Hollywood.
Right.
Where everything was all done, and he goes to this party, and nobody recognizes him, and it's pissing him off. Nobody's even acknowledging him. They're not talking to him. And it's because the entire time he was even on that set, he was basically in makeup of one kind or another.
Right.
It's pretty effective. You look at a picture of the guy, the actual dude that played this, I want to go fishing with that guy. He didn't look like Pinhead at all.
I didn't think the actual pins were very good.
The owl, the pins in his head?
Yeah. I didn't think it was that convincing.
You got all the way down to that. I didn't notice.
Yeah, no, seriously. I went and looked it up. It was a bunch of Q-tips mm-hmm. that they painted silver. Mm-hmm. And I felt that before learning about it. I felt like, that doesn't really look like... Okay, so maybe they fixed it up later, like in other movies or something. Pinhead got to a better special effect on his face. But like... I guess I want little droplets of blood coming out of they're pins in your skin, right? Like you can actually be more effective with that stupid effect.
I kind of think I want to see World War I vet up to Pinhead transition.
Yeah, me too.
Doesn't that have a weird, I have weird curiosity about that. Cause what a weird origin story.
I like it. Yeah.
Talk about the easiest guy to beat in a fight too.
Yeah, right.
Well said. All right, something about a cookie.
You want a cookie, little girl?
Oh, I'm feeling sick.
I'm feeling
sick after that comment.
I just killed a dude and hit him with a hammer and ripped his face apart. Ugh.
Oof. Right.
That guy got it bad.
By the way, that was Larry who was doing that, and that was a fantastic. I thought it was kind of
creepy. You want a cookie, little girl?
Ugh.
That whole sequence was just silly. Like he gets home, and she's been upstairs with Uncle Frank. And she tries to get elsewhere in the house and tries to get herself situated because she's covered in blood. And, of course, they're in a house where it would make total sense for you to be covered in blood. So she could have just walked downstairs and said, hi, honey.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I got blood on me because this house makes you bleed. Like, but instead, she's creeping around and he's calling her name and she's going from one room to the next. And mm-hmm. Like, this is where I have a problem with Andrew Robinson's character. Like, why doesn't he go, hey, WTF?
Yeah.
I just saw you cross that landing and go into that bathroom. You know, and I'm now going to walk in and see what you're doing with the disgusting old faucets. And
he's like you know what he's like? He's like the new BSG Cylon that can make them see whatever they want to see that's going on. It's like, oh, I'm in a beautiful forest while everyone else is in hell.
So you're talking about Frank makes people like, I need this question answered. How does Frank get this woman to do these horrible things? Yeah. When she takes the guy upstairs, I'm thinking, oh, she's taking him to Frank, obviously. Everybody knows she's taking this guy to mm-hmm. Frank. But then when she pulls the hammer, I'm like, whoa, wait, this is the way. How is he controlling her?
Well, just let Frank do it is what I'd do. Well, yeah. I guess he was on his stubs.
Well, the first couple ones, he's a little limpy, like, flailing out with his arms.
Am I the only person who struggled with, is she being mind controlled?
No, for sure, like, for sure, because being in love with the dude in a previous life before he was skinless was not enough for me.
Do you feel like you were even given evidence that she was in love with him?
No.
Well, they kissed and made out and
did it.
It's heavy-handed evidence. It's like they say, hey, by the way, She was in love with him. Look, look, look. She's thinking about having sex with him again. Oh,
oh. And look, that one time where he said, will you do anything for me? Yes, anything. And now he's cashing in that check. It's like,
why?
Hey, you know what I said? Asked if you'd do anything and you said yes. Well, what I need now is for you to bring a dude for me to suck all the blood out of.
What? Okay. But why? Like, yes. Would you do anything for me? Yes. Okay.
Well, I did
why?
Say yes.
I wanted him to ask her why.
Because he was really, really good at the sex.
Okay, Frank. I said yes, so I guess I'll do it. I'll go get a guy. All right. How about, all right. Imagine a movie. Here's a trope I hate, and I'm not playing the trope thing, but imagine a movie where scene has ended. Everyone's kind of looking at each other. It's quiet. It's tense. And then a movie throws this in your auditorial face.
Oh, yes.
I hate how people use monkeys to freak me out between scenes.
Oh, man.
Gosh, quit
and,
that.
Okay, wait. This is a pet store with like a gibbon?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah, you know how they go. You know how they are.
In whatever town.
Like you do.
This is like in Springfield.
Goldfish, gerbils.
Where the Simpsons live.
Yeah.
Like,
would you like to buy some crickets or a gibbon? Like,
I realize it was the 80s and everything, but...
Careful,
I also love it.
Yeah,
I also love it that she's got this job, right? And she walks over and the guy's pulling the crickets out. She's like, no, you put those back. You get out of here. Then her brand new boyfriend shows up and he's like, so when do you get off work? And she doesn't say right now, right this instant. I am walking out of here and never coming back. She's like, oh, I don't know.
Brian, you want these crickets or a gibbon? That's fantastic. All right, then there's this very dubbed over lady in the store who's freaking out, wants a manager.
That,
I love
is
the
that
way
the
she
bird
sounds.
Lady?
Yes. Yeah. So listen to this. I love how she sounds.
Where's the manager? I want to see somebody in charge.
Where's the manager?
Where's the dog? What? And your little dog.
What is that?
Where's the manager?
Ugh.
it's like cartoon voiceover.
right.
Nickelodeon.
I know.
Crazy hijinks are coming soon.
I can't even put my finger on it. Why that sounds so weird, but I like capturing the weird. Come to daddy.
Come to daddy.
Okay. All right.
Come to daddy.
All right. All right.
Oh, well, that's just so you can.
He's gross.
So that she can figure out later on that he's him.
He's really the dad. Spoiler.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
But right? What? Wasn't that the deal?
No. They kept implying that because
I think it is the deal that she is his kid from their tryst before, not bloody time.
No, because she's not even her real mom. She's her stepmom.
Right. But does he seduce? He
oh, you make a good
women.
Point. Yeah, Brian's right.
Well, I was thinking he seduces women, and so he's done this to his brother before because it's only his half brother. And I was curious about the same thing, and I was wondering if they were going to develop that later on because.
I got the impression they were, but I guess not.
In the beginning, they implied that the box was always intended for him and his use. That's what the actor said.
Who, Frank?
When James Hong says the box was always yours.
when not James Hong.
Yeah.
right. The box is always yours. And then the only other person that controlled the box was the girl, and he kept saying, "Who's your daddy?" So I felt like they were trying to imply that, and I've never read the story.
I got the same impression, but Brian makes a good point.
The whole come to daddy thing is so that she can figure out later on that.
Right, but he could have said anything. Like,
well, sure.
Pull my Jimmy John, you know, and that could have been.
Pull my Jimmy John.
So, I mean, that could have been his thing. But yeah, it specifically was making it the daddy thing.
I'd like to, hopefully we'll get some people's comments in the.
Yeah.
Because
maybe more comes from
the blog about this. Because I'd be interested. I don't think so, but well, yeah, maybe, and maybe that's revealed in two, and you've seen two, so maybe there's something else that
floating in my mind. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Because that does continue with Kirstie Cotton.
I'm gonna see two and three.
Kirstie Cotton.
Kirstie
Cotton's in this one too.
Kirstie, that's a stupid name. Makes me thirsty. All right, here is give me the box.
Give me the box.
Give me the box. What's in the box?
Give me the box.
All right. What else? Oh, and we love these on the show.
No!
We have the
yes!
No. Oh, Randy. I should yell that for Randy because he's disconnected again.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, I'm going to keep
just
this.
Disconnected. He was laughing a second ago.
Yeah, I just heard him, so I don't know what that was about. Oh, there he is. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Let's see. Bystander. What? Oh, another great overdub from a random character, person that's not really an actor in the show. Check it out.
You all right?
I love those.
Are you all right?
Hey, lady.
Hey, what's going on?
The original actor wasn't available.
Yeah.
I'm working on my demo reel.
Where's the manager? Where's the manager?
Let's do Pinhead finally speaks right toward the end of the damn movie.
You solved the box. We came. Now you must come with us.
Oh, that's great.
That is fantastic.
It's really good.
It is. Like, there were moments of brilliance in this film, and there were a few and far between.
Mm-hmm. But that voice, he just still scares me. Still probably going to dream about him now, damn it. I dreamt about this movie last night. I watched it yesterday, and I dreamt about it last night. And that's how, I mean, the movie just, I don't know what it is. Clive Barker, I think. It's just his tone. Something about his tone gets me. All right.
It doesn't have much more imagery than the Pinhead and maybe a little bit of Frank. Like, there's really not a lot of scary things for you to dream about, is what I'm saying.
It's not the visuals per se. It's what they're all up to. It's almost like what they're not telling me is what really freaks me out. Like, right. What interdimensional place do you exist where walking around with half your flesh hanging off and hooks in your butt and whatever and your pins all over your head? What reality does that make any sense at all? And it doesn't make any sense to me. You know what? That's why real, actual, like serial killers really freak me out, because they've gone to a place in their head where their world is justified. And
it's funny how you reached such a different same conclusion for me. Like, for me, it's just, in what reality do you have a housewarming party and don't clean up the whole house before your friends come over?
Right.
Yeah. Or how about any of the house? I don't even think the dining room looked good. Like,
no,
all of it,
the whole house
better.
Was still gross.
Yeah. It was all,
like,
disgusting.
I say, that kitchen stayed ugly. Like, they got rid of the maggots, but
it's about time. Get rid of those damn maggots. All right, here he is again.
Maybe.
I like maybe. That's pretty good. It's his guest role on the new Arrested Development reboot.
Maybe.
All right. And then I'll play.
I wish you could add call me to the beginning of that.
Oh, call me maybe.
This is crazy.
And I'll play this one last time.
We'll tear your soul apart.
Ah, dude, come on, man. That's pretty badass.
It is.
And it scares me, because I think he will. He will tear your soul apart.
Because he will. He'll do
it. I think he'll do what he says. All right.
Oh, I have another just off-the-wall question. I need an explanation of this. I'm hoping maybe Brian Dunaway can give it to me.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So the demon upstairs is a jealous one. And at some point, you are kind of compelled somehow to make love to your husband. Oh, you were watching boxing. You're watching boxing, which kind of sucks.
Sexy.
You know? Yeah. And you end up going upstairs, and you're kind of compelled to make love, and the demon comes into your bedroom, and he's going to stop you. He doesn't want you doing that. He wants you for himself. And so he tries to scare you into not continuing the lovemaking act. Why does he
slice rat.
A chunk of a rat? That makes no sense to me.
No, but you're back to my Clive Barker problem. Sorry, Brian, you were going to answer this, but
no, I would definitely, if I was having sex with that man with the sweater and then he came out and sliced the rat, I would totally be done. Like, yeah. I'm done.
Well, that killed the mood.
Yeah, that really put a damper on things. But but that's another thing. There's nothing good coming out of cutting that rat in half. Nothing. There's no good coming out of nail under the wall either.
The like thing about it is, it was kind of gross, but it wasn't that scary.
It's not scary.
Skinless dude with a rat and a knife. Like, it's gross and everything. And yeah, it gets the point across, but
it's just like, it's the reveling in the bloodshed part. I don't know. It's hard for me to explain. But you just described a scene that really disturbs me deeply, because dude with no skin, freaking, what's his name? Healthy Body, Heart Good or whatever on
Healthy Body.
What's on PBS? Whatever his name is.
Right. Some good buddy.
Yeah, standing there in his white, why they gave him a white shirt, but a white shirt and everything's bleeding through. He looks really gross and terrible. And then it proceeds to slice open a very realistic looking rat. And knowing there's no logic to what he's doing, I guess that's what I don't like, is the Clive Barker designs worlds where logic and standard human emotional reactions and thinkings are just thrown out, and instead you're left with,
I like to suck the blood from the head of a goat for no reason because it's a goat. And blah, blah. You know, I don't know.
You're left with a house where Andrew Robinson's character has moved in and he hasn't thoroughly explored all the rooms.
Yeah.
He'll get around to it later.
Yeah, he'll get around to it. And forget about the fact that rat bled on the edge of the bed. I noticed that and they didn't say anything. Anyway, I don't know what it is.
And then she kept saying, no, 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 stop. And he's like, yeah, I'm still going to be making out with you.
All right. Is that we playing that game again? Or?
I love when you scream no and claw my fillet. Exactly. Claw my eyes out. Yeah.
Your fillet.
Sexy.
Where that was going. All right. Let's move on to awards. This is where we... Boy, that music sounds so jolly at the end of a Hellraiser episode. Worst nail hand snag of all time award. Gotta go to this movie. That thing really bled. That was nasty. Go get a tetanus shot, by the way.
True.
And the last fingers I would ever lick on earth are Frank's award because of this movie. Right. When she's all just going, I'm like, dude, I wouldn't lick your hand if Frank had a clean one. I don't trust that guy. So those are your awards. Also, Trek stuff. We got a Star Trek connection in Andrew Robinson, who played Larry in this show. He was on Deep Space Nine, played Elim Garrick on the... he was a Cardassian. Oh, he was Garrick. Oh!
Yeah. Oh, wait.
It's just settling in.
This whole movie, the entire movie, Scott, every time this character speaks, I'm like, a plain, simple Taylor. Simple Garrick.
That drives me crazy now because I knew that, but the whole movie I was like, I know this guy, I know this guy. Now I know why I know this guy.
Okay. Yes.
All right.
Garrick really came through in this portrayal, too.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, well, that bums me out that I'm just now getting it. That's stupid. All right, soundtrack great. I'm going to give it a G for great. I thought it was perfect for the material. I didn't find it old or not hold up-y. I thought it was fine. Creepy and cool.
Great.
Did anyone disagree with that? No?
No, maybe?
All
right.
I thought it was fine.
All right. That was all right. For a movie that old, it was pretty impressive. All right, Twitter post time. That's where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy. What do you got?
Hellraiser. What could possibly cause a woman to do awful, horrific things against her nature other than Uncle Frank's penis?
Ew.
I call it Franken-penis.
good job.
Ugh. Moving on. Dunaway.
Hellraiser. Like, putting on a Larry skin suit is cold, dirty, and gives you the creeps. Do these star earrings make me look 80s?
Nice. And then finally, EBIT.
Hellraiser. Cool visuals, but a very movie of the week feel to the story. Quit calling me Pinhead. These are nails.
Or they're Q-tips now that we've learned. I'm not going to look at them again and not think of that. Well, here's what I learned while you fed traveling douchebag businessmen to your exposed muscle man upstairs. You used to have to go all the way downstairs to answer your phone. Remember that in those days?
Right.
I like how the phone rings and goes, what the hell's that?
What is that? My new way of intimidating people will be to come into your room, slice a rat in half with a switchblade.
True story.
Yeah, I'll do that from now on. And then finally, when you really love your dad, you have a hard time telling when his face is pulled over another dude's skull.
Right?
That was so weird. Like, his whole scalp is bleeding.
Yeah, and
his
she's whole not scalp. Noticing. And she's just, this is great.
That was my whole problem with Face Off, and the reason why I hated that movie is because you can't pull somebody's skin over top of your skeletal structure and look the same.
No.
It just doesn't happen.
Oh, but Face Off's fun.
Oh, but brothers may have a lot more similarities. Okay. All right.
Half brothers. Plus, Frank is like, he wasn't all, I mean, he's mostly other dudes now, right? Because he can't be.
He's got all these other drunk hotel guys.
Businessmen.
Blood in them, yeah.
That's right. Anyway, that's what I learned. Let's do an email. We got one here from Kenneth on this Halloween episode of Film Sack. I said that in such an ominous way. It says, a few years ago, I watched Children of the Corn for the very first time and decided to watch 1 through 7. As a warning to you and Film Sack listeners, do not do this. I kept thinking that the next one could not be as bad as the previous, but they managed to get worse and worse as you go. In the third movie, they start growing corn in the middle of Chicago. I have noticed that there are now 2 more films in the series, one a sci-fi remake of the original and The Children of the Corn Genesis. According to the reviews, in this one, they grow corn in the Mojave Desert. The series of crappy movies makes Friday the 13th movies look like masterpieces. Love the show, Kenneth. Yeah, I don't think I care to watch all those, but I am going to state my intent to possibly watch the rest of these Hellraisers.
I'm at least going to watch the next one.
Yeah, at the very least. Right. But I want those to get worse and worse too. And by all accounts, they do. So I can wash this out of my palate. Because it's still, I know we keep bringing this up, but it still just leaves me a little tweaked, this movie, this whole thing. And I don't know why. So I need to get where it gets dumb, real dumb, so I can, you know, put it past.
I bet you won't have to go far.
No, probably not. It sounds like World War I vet might be all I need, but. I mean, you guys have to admit that's at least interesting.
It is interesting. Yeah, I want to see. I do want to see that origin.
It's like Trading Places, but not a comedy. Anyway, so watch for that. We will report if we decide to do that. I have no idea what our next movie is. Does anyone know? Have it off the top of their head? I forget.
Hopefully, it's a comedy.
It's actually Clue.
Oh really? Oh.
Ooh, we're going to watch all three endings?
We're going to watch Clue, and then after that, Face Off.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, you got to kid me.
Off. Yeah, Brian, come on, man.
Son of a mother.
It's not like we're asking you to watch Minority Report, so relax. It's not that bad. True. Then we got Starship Troopers, Super Troopers. Look at the two Troopers in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Troopers.
Personally, the ones I'm looking forward to is way down the line. Hopefully they all remain, but I'm looking forward to things like Mimic, which I'm a big fan of. Guillermo del Toro film, Mimic, that movie.
Yes.
Dead Zone.
And that'll be Ann Miller.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hubba, hubba. Broken Arrow, another John Woo thing.
Oh, I remember hating that. I can't wait to see it again.
I remember hating it. I want to hate it again.
Oh, my gosh.
I totally remember seeing it.
We have Double Dragon on this list.
Nice!
All right, so all that and more coming up on future Film Sacks. Don't forget to check us out on the website, filmsack.com. If you'd like to leave us an email, we'd love to read those. Filmsack@gmail.com.
Every single episode, people have a really pleasant discussion in the comments on filmsack.com.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, mostly pleasant. Yes.
I like reading those.
Yeah, except for the one about Hot American Summer. Still getting heat for
whatever.
That, by the way.
You know, whatever.
The other night, I'm on iPad Today on Twit the other day. Okay? I'm on there. I'm in the chat room. And they say, I really like Scott, and he's really good guesting on this show. Too bad about that whole wet, hot American summer thing. Like, they're bringing it up in other circles and things. I'm like, who are you people? What is going on in everyone's head? But whatever. Yes, Randy's right. We should mention that more. The comment section are fun. People should use those more. Also, our forums are fantastic as well.
Yeah.
So you want to register and check those out. Follow us on Twitter, @FilmSack, and leave us a review on iTunes. We hope everyone has a fabulous and safe Halloween, which when I grew up, that just meant you didn't have glass in your Hershey's and
razor blades in your apples.
Yeah, no razor blades in your apples. What was some of the other ones? They had like Girl Scout cookies with like tacks in them or something.
Yeah, something.
Oh,
like,
the worst is just the prank where you make candy apples, but you start with onions.
Yeah.
Oh,
I've heard of that.
That's awesome.
There is nothing like biting into a caramel covered onion.
Oh, I can't wait to do that.
There's only one thing. I've only done one thing either as bad as that or maybe worse, depends on how you look at it. But the Twinkies where you take a syringe and you suck the middles out of the Twinkies and you re-inject mayonnaise.
Why would you do that?
Well, we did that. We had that happen at work. And awesome. I got one bite in, just about hurled. We had a fat guy named Marshall who ate 12 of them before he finally realized what the hell was going on.
Oh,
these are delicious.
Like, Marshall, do you know what you're eating?
Oh, these are pretty good. I don't know. There's no problem with these. Dip, 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 dip.
It's like watching, it was bad. It was real bad.
Let me give you guys a little bit of a warning. Don't eat Twinkies or candy apples for the next couple months here at my house.
Right. Right.
Hope your son and wife don't hear about it. Well, that's good advice as far as I'm concerned. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. That's going to do it. Stay tuned for next week. We'll be talking about Clue, the classic, I believe. For me, for Ryan, for Brian, Ryan, and the other guy, Ryan, and then also Randy. We'll see you next time.
Don't look at me.
We have such shit. We have such sights to show. Come here, damn you. I want to touch you. No tears, please. It's a waste of good suffering. We'll tear your soul apart.
Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.